Good morning, Justice Holland, and may it please the Court. My name is Bernard O'Donnell. I'm here on behalf of the defendant, Brandon Robinson, who was convicted in the Superior Court of murder first degree. We allege a single error, says in this court, but we also claim that it's a very crucial error. And one of the reasons why it's a crucial error is because of the evidence or lack of evidence in this case which supported the defendant's conviction for murder first degree. I won't review all of the evidence because I know the court has reviewed the briefing and appendices. However, this was an unusually thin case insofar as proof. Essentially, it relied upon, says the testimony, says of one person who suffered a wound at the scene of the crime, which was a street corner, says in the city of Wilmington. It was a shooting, unfortunately a common occurrence, but in this case there was only one eyewitness that the state could present. And that eyewitness gave several accounts of the offense prior to trial, and in each of those accounts there were inconsistencies which the defense explored in the cross-examination of the defendant. And that resulted in, says, the errors as which we raise on appeal. There's a crucial difference in the facts of this case, and that difference is contrasted in two statements in the briefing, insofar as the statements of fact. And the resolution of that factual question determine whether the defendant was guilty or not. The defense alleges in its opening brief that Glanton, who suffered a bullet wound, says, to his leg injury, says, during this incident, the sole state's witness, Glanton testified that he saw the defendant pull a handgun out of his waistband and pointed at Cameron Johnson. Glanton then ran, and while running away from the scene, he was shot in the leg and wounded. The state, on the other hand, alleges in its briefing that Robinson stopped directly before Johnson, pulled a black and silver semi-automatic gun from his waistband, and shot Johnson from arm's length distance. The state asserts that the evidence says that the defendant shot Johnson, the decedent, whereas we claim it's more accurate to state that based upon, says the evidence, that Glanton testified that he saw the defendant Robinson pull a gun and then ran, says, from the scene, and he was then shot. Now, that's important because one of the other associates of the person who was with our client, R.C., was seen with a firearm several times that afternoon in the various, you know, peripatetic wanderings of these various individuals, which culminated in the tragic shootings, as in death.
And the error was what, precisely?
The error was the defense had explored several inconsistencies in the critical witnesses, Jared Glanton's pretrial statements, a number of inconsistencies. Probably the cross-examination lasted a half hour, says, to an hour. The error is that in cross-examination, the prosecutrix, start out right away in rehabilitating the witness concerning these inconsistencies. Start out by saying, Jaron, and this is from A48, Jaron, over the last couple of weeks or last month or two, have you and I met and talked about this case? Yes. Have you met with Mr. Kreiner and spoke about this case? Yes, the other prosecutor. During some of those meetings, was Detective Plath present at the time? Yes. At any point during any of those meetings, did any of us tell you what you should say when you were here? Yes. What did we tell you? Tell the truth. When talking about how to answer questions, is that all we told you, etc.? And then there was a defense objection to that. That is where the error occurred. And that is the critical difference. There's a permissible way to rehabilitate a witness under those circumstances.
Excuse me for one moment. There was an objection.
Yes, there was an objection. Mr. Maurer.
On what basis?
I'll quote, "I'm going to have to object to this. I didn't go down this road intentionally. Now we are getting into hearsay about what the prosecutors may have said."
It was a hearsay, not a vouching objection.
We respectfully says disagree. Now,
it was a vouching objection?
Yes.
Where in the record?
It doesn't say vouching in the sense that vouching or prosecutorial misconduct are talismanic words. If there's an error, perhaps it's because Mr. Maurer was being, says, diplomatic or civil, says about, says the objection.
Well, whether he was being diplomatic or not, what words did he use that would put the trial judge on notice that that is the nature of the objection?
The nature of the objection, I believe it's obvious. When you assert that the prosecutor says it's testifying, it's hearsay, that's vouching. Vouching is error. So what we're talking about here is a semantic difference.
Well, if the prosecutor testifying could also be impermissible leading, if it's you know, on direct testimony, I mean, I don't understand why that would necessarily or so obviously translate into a vouching objection that the court could be found in error for not intervening sua sponte.
We don't believe so, because the gravamen of vouching, says the problem is that the prosecutor is putting before the jury evidence that the jury should not consider.
Well, didn't the defense counsel open the door to the conversations with the prosecutor while preparing for trial specifically? Let me go through that with you. When did you come to this realization? Last week? Yes. Preparing for trial? Right. While meeting with the prosecutors? Yes. So the defense counsel specifically focused on a meeting between the testifying witness and the prosecutor.
We don't just believe that is so, says if.
That's A37.
And Mr. Maurer responds to that in his objection, and he states, and we believe, looking at it closely, Mr. Maurer says best explains what he was doing. He was not suggesting that the prosecutors were engaging in any type of misconduct. What he was trying to establish was that at various conversations with state's agents, police officers, prosecutors in preparation of trial, the defendant was giving inconsistent statements. And as the progression occurred towards trial, he was making an attempt to make his consistency, to reconcile the inconsistencies in his statements. There's no suggestion there that there was any type of prosecutorial misconduct. Mr. Maurer didn't say that, well, didn't the prosecutor suggest to you that you change this? There was nothing whatsoever. And Mr. Maurer,
why don't you read us a quote directly,
okay,
so we know exactly what he meant?
Okay. On A37, on page 132, Mr. Maurer, if I have been given a chance, Mr. Kreiner's objection to that Mr. Maurer is impugning says the prosecutors, Mr. Maurer responds on page 132, if I have been given a chance, what I am trying to suggest the timing of his realization of the mistake he made on the description is convenient right before the trial. Now, I'd ask the court to consider Mr. Kreiner's response. Mr. Kreiner's response there acknowledges that Mr. Maurer was not doing anything improper. Mr. Kreiner, I don't want the horses out of the barn. He's trying to prevent something from happening that has not already occurred.
But the jury's not hearing any of this, right?
No, they heard what Mr. Kreiner says, acknowledges, was not harmful. Quote, I understand what you are doing, Mr. Maurer. I'm trying to establish the timing here. I don't have any problem with you doing a valid point.
Was that in open court or at sidebar?
That was at sidebar.
So the jury did not hear that.
But nonetheless, it was, the jury did not hear that, but nonetheless, it was an admission by Mr. Kreiner that what Mr. Maurer was doing was not improper, and he understood that. But he just didn't want to get to that point. And then Mr. Maurer said, well, you know, don't assume that I'm going to do something improper before, says I do. I would never do anything like that. That's at 837 and 838.
All right. Well, let's change this to a hypothetical so we don't get confused. One reading of the record would be a suggestion that his testimony was shaped by his conversation with the prosecutors, proper or improper. And we have to think about a general rule. You know, you're saying this is important. And defense attorneys talk to witnesses all the time, not their clients. So we're not mm-hmm. talking about attorney-client privilege, but witnesses. Mm-hmm. And there's always the suggestion that a witness's testimony may or may not have been shaped by trial preparation. Mm-hmm. If that's the case on either side, and there's a suggestion that the testimony was shaped by trial preparation, you were going to tell us earlier how you do it. In this case, the prosecutor said, what were you told? And the word truth was introduced by the answer. But the issue we have to resolve is what was done improperly in this case that constitutes reversible error. So in the context of my hypothetical, with a suggestion that the testimony was shaped by preparation, what do you do?
What do you do? Well, as a prosecutor, the permissible way to do that is says, Mr. Glanton, the defense counsel has pointed out various inconsistencies in your statements prior to trial to various people, police officers and prosecutors. Correct? You acknowledge that? Yes. Now, what was the first thing you did this morning, says, prior to your testimony? Well, I swore. I was made an oath. What was the oath? It says, to tell the truth. Are you telling the jury the truth this morning? Yes. Now, can you explain why there is this inconsistency or that inconsistency? Please explain to the jury why you were inconsistent with that statement. The critical difference there is that is permissible because the prosecutor has not placed their imprimatur upon the defendant's testimony. Didn't I tell you to tell the truth this morning, to testify as to what you're saying says this morning?
But that's where the question is critical. As I understand it here, there was a change in the description of the color of the eyes. Mm-hmm. And then there was a examination about when did you have the revelation about what you now say are the color of the eyes. And there's one question is, didn't I tell you to tell the truth? Mm-hmm. The other question is, what were you told? Aren't those two different questions?
I don't believe so. Because what were you told by me, that is an extrajudicial statement by the prosecutors is to tell the truth. The prosecutor is lending the imprimatur of their personal endorsement of this witness and this testimony, and that's the problem.
Let's try another hypothetical to get at this. Let's assume a direct frontal attack that the prosecutors impermissibly coerced a lie from the witness's mouth with the assistance of a police officer in the room armed. And either the witness says it directly, they told me what to say, they told me to make this up, they told me to do X, Y, and Z. And all of that I said earlier is untrue. Mm-hmm. Can the prosecutors, if they have a different version, if the police was present, could he testify all the prosecutors said was tell the truth? I mean, is this tell the truth a forbidden phrase that can never be used in a courtroom?
Under that circumstance, yes, because there's an alternative permissible way to do it. The police officer can testify. Rather than the prosecutor testifying, the police officer can testify. And the best way to do it is to record these statements. And if the prosecutor, and the, so the prosecutor is not assuming an official capacity as a proponent of the truth before the jury.
What if the question was, weren't you told to tell the truth?
There are nuances there. That is less offensive, but the better way to say it is
well, there may be a lot of better ways. The question is, does that cross the line, or is it up to the line?
I think it does, because there's an alternative permissible way of saying it without vouching. And that, did you swear this morning to tell the truth?
Yeah, but you're saying that it crosses the line because it isn't permissible. That's, you know,
because
that's a non sequitur. I mean, why isn't it permissible when there's no reference, there's no use of the word I?
Well, the question is, who's the missing person in the room? Weren't you told to tell the truth? By me.
Not necessarily. Mm-hmm. By the police?
Weren't you told to tell the truth? Didn't you swear to tell the truth? That's still a difference.
You want to save your remaining time?
Yes, sir. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Good morning, Ms. McFarland.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Elizabeth McFarland on behalf of the state. This was not a case of vouching by the prosecution. This was a case of responding to the inference that the prosecution had affected the testimony of the complaining witness. The defense counsel had, in fact, not just made reference to timing issues with this witness changing his details of his testimony. He specifically asked about it, whether that timing was when he was meeting with the Attorney General at the Attorney General's office. And even after the prosecutors had pointed out that they did not want that to happen, he repeated, the defense counsel repeated in questioning once again at the Attorney General's office.
So you're saying in this case, the form of the question, which, you know, incorporated the word I, was not vouching because that form of question was justified by a suggestion made by defense counsel that somehow the state or the prosecutor shaped the testimony of the witness. Is that your contention?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Can you read from the record where that suggestion was made by defense counsel?
At A48, at A39, excuse me, this was after the initial objection by the prosecutor. There was thank you by counsel. Thank you. So then it was 7 o'clock this morning that you realized for the first time that you had been mistaken. The witness, no, I just said that I realized last week when I listened to my statement that I was wrong. Counsel, that was when you were in the Attorney General's office? Correct. So even after that issue was raised as something that would be objectionable, and defense counsel had said, oh, no, I'm just going for the timing, he then repeated the Attorney General's office in questioning. So
what was the exact question that was asked in this case by the prosecutor?
That was objected to?
Yeah.
It was, what did we tell you? And the question prior to that was, at any point during any of these meetings, did any of us tell you what you should say when you were here?
So it was, what did we tell you, not what did I tell you?
Correct.
Okay.
And it wasn't really going to whether the witness was telling the truth. It was going to whether the prosecutors or the police or some government agency had told him to tell something other than the truth. And so it wasn't a question of the state vouching for this witness' truthfulness. The state was protecting its own reputation by saying we weren't telling our witnesses to say a particular thing. And in this case, the witness had consistently said that where he discovered the fact that he had said something incorrectly earlier was by looking at Delaware Online and by reviewing his prior statement. The witness himself never said anything about it being, never brought that issue up. It was only defense counsel.
What if the prosecutor had used the word truth and said, did we tell you to tell the truth? Would that be different?
I think it's, there may be a nuance there, but I don't think it would be a reversible error.
The reason I say that is because if you use the word truth, you're focusing on truth.
Correct.
If you say, what did we tell you? The witness could say, do your best, use your best recollection, don't guess. There are a variety of things that people tell witnesses, you know, in preparation. Listen to the question, answer the question directly, don't make a long answer. And one of them is tell the truth. So if the question doesn't introduce truth, you're simply saying to the witness, what were you told? The fact that truth came out in the answer may not be dispositive when we have to decide whether the question was improper.
Correct. I would definitely agree. But however, even if truth were in the question, I don't think that that would be fatal. Because that's been, in this context, it was clear that the prosecution was not trying to go for.
Well, let's not have us decide issues that we don't have to decide.
Correct.
The question here was open-ended,
yes,
as Justice Holland suggested. So there could have been any number of answers, many of which would not raise the specter of vouching.
Correct.
One of which possibly would. So I take it that your argument is that it would be improper to infer any intent on the part of the prosecution to be vouching when asking the question in that way.
Absolutely, Your Honor. The state's position is that there was no vouching whatsoever, that this was simply to clear the record up, given what had happened.
And the hearsay objection possibly was well-founded because, or at least the defense could have seen it as an effort to establish as fact whatever it was that the police said.
By an
in-court declarant, but attributing it to someone who was not in court.
Yeah, no, the hearsay objection was entirely proper, and defense counsel did not make that objection until the question became, when talking about how to answer questions, is that all we told you is to, so that was clearly going to be illicit hearsay, and so it was obviously a hearsay objection. That's what he said. The state disagrees that it was any other kind of objection, and the court quickly said, I think it's been asked and answered, and the state prosecutor moved on. So in terms of a 7-day trial, this was pretty much of a non-event. The witness had changed his description. That was not in dispute. Notably, too, that the defense counsel also brought out the fact that it was in the attorney general's office in closing. So to say that he was only going after timing was not necessarily continued throughout brought it up again.
Is that relevant to the analysis?
No, I'm just saying that it was clear that that was something that the prosecutors perceived was going on, and it did go on, and so they were protecting their own reputation. I think it confirms their perception. If the court has no other questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
state contends in its argument that this was not vouching in any way, that it was in fact an invited to response. I think I acknowledged in the opening argument, and I'll concede now, that there are subtleties in this record. There are fine points insofar as how statements can be read. And one of the difficulties with that is that, you know, this is not a forum, says, to blame prosecutors for what happens at trial. It's a forum, both trials in the Superior Court and appeals in this court are forums to determine that what happens is fair. And the context of that is that although there are nuances in the wording here, the prejudice with the jury can be monumental because of the thinness of the evidence in this case. One of the problems in this case that I asked the court to consider, the context, the relative weight. Maybe there are subtle distinctions here in the questions and answers, but the prejudice can be astronomical because just consider, says the verdict here. What is the explanation, says, for the split verdict? The defendant was found guilty of the murder of Cameron Johnson, but yet based on the same evidence, the same one witness, Jared Glanton, who claimed he was shot in the leg by the same, says, defendant, the defendant was found not guilty of shooting Jared Glanton, the state's primary, says, only, says, witness. That's the context. So though all the distinctions can be, nuances can be small, the prejudice can be substantial.
Well, and that isn't one of the potential nuances, and I know that there's the sidebar you talked about, but one of the potential nuances is that this witness changed his story because the prosecutors and the police officers said something to him when they were preparing for trial.
I don't think that's a reach insofar as an inference. The inference, the more permissible inference, I would think, as a jury, is here's a defendant who's said several statements, and he's trying to get it right. He's studying his various other statements to try to get it right. The prosecutors aren't coaching him. The prosecutors didn't serve him anything.
That's not an inference that the defense would be suggesting, is it?
Oh, I think it is. He's trying to get it right. Various inconsistencies, and he's trying to reconcile everything and come up with a consistent story in his testimony in court. But he can't do that because he had various truths before then.
Well, here we had a very experienced trial attorney for the defense. If this was vouching, wouldn't we expect to see a request for a curative instruction or a limiting instruction or a motion for a mistrial?
Perhaps, but on the other hand, the trial judge said, you know, overruled, the question has been asked and answered. So the trial judge ruled right there, and they moved on to something else.
All right. We've used up all your time.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your arguments. We'll take the matter under advisement and recess.
Thank you.